Blog Talk Radio. You are about to embark on a journey through time and space, a journey where anything is possible, and where science is fiction. It's a journey known only as Sci-Fi Radio.
Welcome to this place they call Week. Welcome to the new side of me. Just for you, I'm down on my knees. 'Cause without you, I never could be.
Engage your seat restraints. Keep all hands and appendages inside the space vehicle and enjoy the ride. Here's the host of Sci-Fi Radio, Michael Hinman.
There are those who believe that life here began out there, far across the universe, with tribes of humans who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians or the Toltecs or the Mayans. Some believe that there may yet be brothers of man who even now fight to survive somewhere beyond the heavens.
I'm Michael Hinman, the founder and site coordinator of Sci-Fi Portal, the science fiction and fantasy news site that you can find online at www.syfyportal.com. Tonight, as you may have read on various Star Trek sites or at Sci-Fi Portal itself, we're welcoming from Star Trek The Next Generation, the man who spent years in white face makeup and acting like a robot, Brent Spiner. We interviewed him actually last week for the show and talked about a lot of things, including his thoughts on the upcoming Star Trek movie, why Rick Berman is vilified so much, with being forever tied to the android Data, and of course, the future of the Trek franchise in 2008, because the following two Wednesdays are Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. I figured you have more important things to do than tune in to Sci-Fi Radio, so I'm going to take it off, and so should you. But before we have a grand, by next Wednesday, you likely will have seen at least three installments of the webisodes of Battlestar Galactica. Well, the writer of those webisodes will be joining us on Scio for our final show of the year. Jane Espenson, Buffy fans, and later Dollhouse fans will join us next week, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about. And by the way, we seem to be having some audio problems here, and we're trying to figure out what it is. Let's take a quick second here. We're going to just try to see if we can do kind of a reboot. I hate this. One of the bad parts about trying to do these shows live is that you sometimes run into this stuff, but
system failure.
Yeah, system failures, right. But just give us here a second. We'll come right back, I promise. Let's just see if we fix these audio problems so you don't have to listen to me breaking up the entire time. So hold on one second. We'll be right back. All right, we're going to see if we can try this again, and as soon as we can stop the music here. So what we want everybody, if you're listening live, just kind of take a listen here to make sure, are we actually coming in clear now? And if so, just kind of answer in the chat room and such. Let us know kind of how we're sounding, because we might have to just a system reboot here, which I hate to do. And it sounds like we're still breaking up. Sorry about that. We are definitely going to jump into the show. Let's just do technical. Now, the people who do podcasts, they never have this live, but it figures a show where we have listening in that we're seeming to be having some problems. So, people are saying this. Well, my producer saying it's pretty light. What's going on? And you know what? I actually I see if we can stop out there. Now I should be coming in clear, and everybody should be able to be able to hear it much better. What actually happened, and I'm almost sure that everybody's going to hear it, is going to sound much clearer, and it should. And this is actually a very annoying thing, and I usually check this, but for some reason, right before the show, I didn't. For where we do the show from, we actually, we're on the wireless. We just have like the wireless router and everything, and all of our computers are kind of in that area, so they could come in and, and give us the internet access. But what's happening is that I live in a condo complex, so there is one of my neighbors, and I don't know which one it is, but they have like one of those unsecured routers, and I cannot imagine anybody, by the way, having an unsecured router. You have no idea the wackos like me who can get on there. Well, what was happening, and I noticed it on my MacBook here, because I have like two computers set up, which is what we used to do the show. And the Mac that I used to call in, it was connected to that other internet, which is probably slow, slower speeds, and of course a good distance away. It has a weak signal, so that's kind of what was happening. And it took me a couple of times to figure out exactly what it was. So I'm really sorry about that. I usually check that. That's my bad. I'm trying to get into holiday mode or something, and you know, it's all kind of crazy. But you know, my bad on that. So anyway, I'm Michael Himmen, the founder and site coordinator of Sci-Fi Portal, which you can find online at www.syfyportal.com. And tonight, as you may have read on various Star Trek sites around the web and at Sci-Fi Portal itself, we welcome from Star Trek The Next Generation the man who spent years in white face makeup and acting like a robot, Brent Spiner. We interviewed him last week for the show and talked about a lot of things, including his thoughts on the upcoming Star Trek movie, why Rick Berman is vilified so much, what he thinks about being forever tied to the android Data, and what the future of the Trek franchise will be like. So stay tuned, we'll be getting into that soon. And as I was mentioning before, next week is going to be our final show of 2008, because the following two Wednesdays are Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, and I figure that all of you have much more important things to do than to tune into Sci-Fi Radio. So you know what? I'm taking a couple weeks off, and so should you. But before we do that, we're going to have a great guest on next week, and that's next Wednesday. You likely have seen at least three installments of the webisodes of Battlestar Galactica. They premiere on Friday. Well, the writer of those webisodes will join us on Sci-Fi Radio for our final show of the year. Jane Espenson, who is loved by Buffy fans, Battlestar fans, and pretty soon Dollhouse fans, is going to join us next week, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about. In fact, we had to pre-record the interview, kind of like we did with Brent Spiner tonight, to help accommodate her schedule. And to be honest, I just got off the phone with her like a couple hours ago. She was in the writer's room for the new Fox series Dollhouse, where she's part of the staff there, and mentioned that Joss Whedon had flew past her doorway a few times on his scooter. He likes to ride around in the back offices when they're all busy writing. And do you know, we didn't have time to get him to stop and be on the phone for a few minutes. That would have been really cool, but who knows, maybe next time. Anyway, I know you're all excited about hearing what Brent Spiner has to say. And you know what? I'm excited too, even though I've already talked to him. You know, it's kind of weird what I do sometimes. I grew up watching Star Trek The Next Generation and always thought Data was like the most intriguing character. I never thought that sitting there at 12 years old, that 20 years later I'd be spending a half hour on the phone with him. Listen to him, you know, and it's funny, you won't hear it because we edited it out, but he actually had to interrupt the interview because he was yelling at his dog who was out in the yard chewing something, and, you know, of course didn't want him to get sick. So, but yeah, I know, I really have a tough job in what I'm doing. But anyway, if you're listening to us live, don't be left out. Feel free to call in at 646-200-3642, and if we get some time before the end of the show, we'll definitely like to hear some of your thoughts about what's happening in science fiction and, of course, about some of the things that Brent Spiner said. You also can join us in our chat room, which you can find simply by going to www.scifiradio.com. That's S-Y-F-Y radio. When you get there, look for a flashing green button inviting you to our chat room, and should be pretty self-explanatory from there. But anyway, enough of me rambling. Let's hear some headlines.
Sci-Fi Radio.
Sci-Fi Radio.
Sci-Fi Radio. Headlines.
Here's what's happening this week in the world of science fiction. It looks like the possibility of yet another union strike to shut down Hollywood is growing. The Screen Actors Guild is sending out ballots to its 120,000 members just after the new year, giving them just 3 weeks to decide whether or not they would be willing to hit the picket lines if a deal can't be worked out with the studios. SAG insists that authorizing a strike, which would take approval by 75% of those voting, doesn't mean there'll necessarily be a strike, but the studios blasted the move, saying it was the wrong thing to do in an economy as the economy crashes and burns in the United States. The issue coming up to works is the same one that kept the studios and the writers locked up last year. It's all about compensation from new media like the internet. SAG says the deal offered by the studios sucks, and the studios say that SAG is being greedy and wants more than what the writers, directors, and everyone else in Hollywood got in recent negotiations. Will there be a strike? I don't know, but I hope not.
Headlines.
Brian Fuller is officially back on Heroes, and don't get your hopes up too high. He's only back right now as a consultant, but he could take a much larger role in the fourth season. He told Entertainment Weekly's Michael Osiello that one of the biggest problems plaguing Heroes this season is that stories focused on formulas and catalysts and everything else, and not so much on the people, really isn't the way to go. Stories were way too dense, and his goal is to keep showrunner Tim Kring and help him bring heroes back to his glory days of the first season. With filming already going forward on the 19th episode of the season, there probably isn't too much Fuller can do this year, now that Pushing Daisies hasn't been canceled by ABC, but he said the upcoming Fugitives chapter is something fans will enjoy, and maybe will lure some of the Lost fans back.
Headlines.
Torchwood is moving to BBC One this season for its 5-episode run, but it doesn't mean the show has been sanitized. In fact, it's the exact opposite, director Euros Lynn told the official Torchwood magazine. Fans will get the same old adult Torchwood that they've enjoyed in the past. The only thing different is that the cast will be smaller and the storylines more contained. But once they get going, there will be plenty for everyone to talk about, and none of it will be kvetching over supposedly bad rumors that Torchwood has been made more family-friendly, like Doctor Who.
Headline.
And finally, speaking of Doctor Who, outgoing showrunner Russell T. Davies told British publication Radio Times that he already is planning for the demise of David Tennant's Doctor. Aspects of his upcoming regeneration will show up in the special slated to air in 2009 in place of the 5th season, all culminating with the big event at the end of next year. So who will fill Tennant's shoes? Davies isn't talking, and it likely won't be his decision anyway, since Stephen Moffat takes over when the show returns to its normal schedule in 2010.
Headlines.
You can read all these stories and more at Sci-Fi Portal, the science fiction and entertainment news site that you can find online right now at www.syfyportal.com. And, you know, I have to say, what I have left, Wayne, Wayne's our producer, by the way, I have like a month left, I think, of hosting Sci-Fi Radio, and then Wayne and Nick Chase take over. It'll become a monthly show and move to a different night of the week, and I'll be actually on a different show, which I'm hoping we're going to be able to talk about next week. We're still working out some of the details, and I'd love to share some of those with you, but I will still be on weekly. It would just be kind of a different show, kind of a more expansive show and a little bit of a different format. But, you know, and one thing that'll be different, even though we're going to broadcast the show live like we do right now with Sci-Fi Radio, I mean, we're going to focus a bit more on being on people who can come in and listen to it in their own time and, you know, any other time during the week. So things like that we had tonight where I just kind of come in at the wrong, on the wrong internet service and sound like I'm, you know, calling in from Mars or something won't really happen. So that's the beauty of editing, which you'll hear in the Brent Spiner interview. I bet when you listen to the Brent Spiner interview tonight, I want you to try to figure out, and I'll be watching the chat room, I want to try to figure out if you can tell where I edited the interview, because there's a couple of parts in there where we edited, you know, just kind of little things like yelling at the dog or, you know, things like that. So see if you can figure it out when you're listening. And I've gotten pretty good at this whole editing thing, so hopefully it works out pretty well. But anyway, coming up in just a few minutes, we'll play you my chat with the man behind the mask of Mr. Data. Of course, I'm talking about Brent Spiner. But first, he's a writer behind the great thought-provoking works of Sci-Fi 101 and has been knee-deep in semester-ending finals at his college where he teaches. And I was about to bring him on, but he just disappeared. Dan, you might want to call back in. There you go. He disappeared from the switchboard and came back. But anyway, please welcome to Sci-Fi Radio, Dr. Dan Kapora. How you doing, Dan?
Doing good, Mike. Having some technical problems here with my phone. Had to dial in for myself.
See, it's just not it's not a night for technology. It must be what it is.
Am I clear?
Yeah, you sound great to me. I don't know how you sound to everybody else, but...
Okay.
So, man, it's been a while since you've been on, and but it's good to hear you again. And, you know, tell us some of the things you've been working on. What have you been watching? What's been going on?
Well, I've been tied up with, and I'm hoping to turn this into a Sci-Fi 101 article. I've been working on an academic piece on ghost lore, ghost folklore, and I've been weaving some, definitely weaving some pop culture references into that. So I'm trying to, once I finish the academic piece, move that into a sci-fi piece. And other than that, pretty much just winding down the semester. I've been pretty disappointed in the Sarah Connor Chronicles in the last month, though.
Yeah, what was up with last week's episode? And, you know, I tried to watch it, and I did. I mean, I watched the whole thing, but it just seemed a little – I think somebody in our message board said it was a little bit contrived, and I agreed with that.
Yeah, you know, you mean not this past Monday, but the week before?
No, I'm talking about this past Monday.
I just got to watch that online because I did. Bad week for technology. My DVR failed this week. you know, I didn't mind this week as much, but this show just doesn't real. I mean, it seems like they have like a revolving door between the past and present. And you know, I remember in the first Terminator film, and I hate to admit I'm a Terminator purist, so it kind of just irks me every time they stray further and further from that original plot line. But the fact that people could come back, people and Terminators could come back. Through time, it was a rare occurrence. And here, I mean, how many different Terminator models did they make? I mean, it just seems like every week there's a new Terminator model that we see that comes out, which, of course, is just a different actor. We have everybody seemingly has come from the future. I don't know. It's just, to me, the show just seems completely convoluted. I'm not sure they know where it's going. A couple episodes have been terrific this year, but quite honestly, I'm really struggling to keep my interest in it.
You know, and I think that the whole time travel aspect, and this is something I actually brought up when I interviewed, but when I spoke with a showrunner in San Diego in July, we were talking about this, and one of the things that I'd asked about was the fact that there seems to be a lot of time traveling going on, and I mean, you know, the whole point is, from what I understand, I mean, when the first Terminator came out, I was only like 6 or 7 or 8 years old, but you know, watching it later, I mean, it just seems that it would make sense that traveling through time is not very easy to do, you know, and it's not something you just keep doing all the time. Otherwise, there's like a million times, I mean, they could have sent a whole army of Terminators after John Connor or got him at any, you know, single point in time, or even got rid of Sarah Connor when she was a kid and stopped that. I mean, there's just so many things that they could have done, and it just seems like they've created this highway between the two time periods, and, you know, and I mean, it just makes no sense to me that why they wouldn't send somebody back to get rid of Sarah Connor as a baby or something, and, you know, not even give John Connor a chance. So I just, you know, I think that what happens then is by having this free flow of people going back and forth, I think it creates kind of a major plot hole.
Well, yes. I agree. Just the show is doing things that it doesn't even take a lot of imagination to find fault with. I mean, occasionally if you just sit back and watch a program and you can see the plot holes just kind of popping up. I mean, somebody mentioned on the message board on this week's episode that how did that Terminator throw Cameron through a window when he was obviously about a mile away at the time? And that's a good question. I mean, I'm willing to suspend belief to a certain point. I mean, I'm willing to allow that a Terminator can come through time, but I guess I'm not willing to allow that an unlimited number of Terminators can come through time. This whole notion of different factions of Terminators, the multiple storylines that they're pulling in with characters, I hate to say I don't really care about. It's a show that's lost its way. I think it needs to pretty much get simple and limit the number of Terminator models down to a couple, you know, two or three recognizable ones, and make it more of an action series. But they're trying to make it a human drama. Every week it's John whining about wanting to be normal, and you know, and I understand that's part of the story. But over a 22-week season, it wears a little thin, and. It's just, I don't know, it's just losing me right now. I mean, it's not the only show. Heroes has really been a struggle for me to watch, although the last two episodes have been better recently.
You know, and I mean, of course, John isn't complaining every week of John Connor because he hasn't been, you know, he hasn't been on for like the last couple of weeks. And, you know, and it's funny because, you know, a lot of shows, what they do is they set up to where they might film 22 episodes, but even your stars and everybody else pretty much might only appear in 20 episodes. So you're going to have episodes where they don't show up, but it just seems so obvious when these people are missing. And, you know, and I mean, I don't think we've seen John Connor in 2 weeks. I mean, I can't remember if he was in the episode before or not, but I mean, we had the episode that was centered on Cameron and, you know, maybe a little bit of people here and there. But I mean, and then you have Brian Austin Green's character, he just disappears. You know, nobody even wonders where he is. You know, he's like, oh, he's gone. I guess he's not in this week. He's off skiing somewhere. But, I mean, it just seems so obvious when those characters are missing, and like other shows where you might not notice. And I don't know, maybe it's just that they, you know, make these characters so important and, you know, maybe not spending enough time on story. But, yeah, I really think that the show is going to struggle going into this last end if they don't really try to pick things up.
Well, you know, and the only reason I can suspect that they kept it for a whole year was the hope that it would attract viewers or serve as a marketing tool for the upcoming film. But at this point, I really have to question whether keeping the series alive is going to do more harm than good. I mean, there have been some very poor episodes of this program. And, you know, I just wonder if people aren't watching, and obviously it's shed viewers, you know, it's hard to tell. I mean, Dancing with the Stars probably didn't rob many Terminator enthusiasts, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, they got a slight bump, I believe, from what I read. They got a slight bump, but everybody's going to get a slight bump when the number one show goes off. And so I don't really think that you can count the recent bump they might have had as a real positive. I think the show is really, you know, either it needs to tie some of these disparate storylines together pretty quickly, or it's, you know, it runs the risk of actually serving as a negative promotional tool for the upcoming movie. And, you know, I don't want to criticize the people involved with the making of the show. I mean, it's obviously they've put a lot of time and energy into it. It's just that the story just is not working for me, and the number of viewers it's losing, I'm guessing, is not working for a lot of people either.
You know, it's not really in the greatest time slot, but it's not in a bad time slot either. And people keep complaining about the time slot, but Mondays really isn't all that bad. And, you know, Heroes used to do very, of course, Heroes was on a different night, but, I mean, but it seems like shows across the board are kind of suffering, but there's others that aren't. And, you know, I mean, everybody keeps giving me this whole line about Monday Night Football interfering. I mean, the only thing Monday Night Football's interfered with me is that, you know, the game, you know, was with a local team here with us last Monday night. So ABC, our local ABC affiliate, broadcast the ESPN feed, and so I didn't get to watch Boston Legal, which I still haven't seen because I can't even get it on iTunes now for some reason. But, You know, I mean, but I just don't really think there's that much of the audience that's going away to that, because other shows which should also be suffering, you know, from a loss of this 18 to 49 demographic, you know, I think they would be suffering as well. And it seems like a lot of them are doing pretty good.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, the sad truth is, and it's just not a great show. And I think that what you're going to see, and we're going to look back in history, most of the shows that aired during the strike just did not gain a lot of traction. And it started out with a nice season opener this year, but I don't think it's anything to do with the time slot. I think the story's gotten a little bit convoluted. There are too many characters I don't care about, and I think that, you know what, I like the old days with the, you know, calling X-Files back in the old days, but a smaller cast, I mean, there's something to be said for that. I think that Heroes made the mistake, and Lost, of after their first season, they started with big casts, and then they grew their cast even bigger. And I think that this show needs to focus on John and Sarah. And if they can focus on John Connor and Sarah Connor, eliminate all these extraneous storylines. I do like the Derek Reese character. I think Brian Austin Green's done a tremendous job with him. But the entire storyline with the Catherine Weaver just isn't working for me. I don't know. I just don't know where it's going.
Yeah, it's tough, but I know that's kind of what's going on. So anyway, Dan Gapora, Dr. Dan, who writes Sci-Fi 101 for Sci-Fi Portal, and I'm sure we have another column for you coming up pretty soon. So, you know, look forward to having you on again. And, you know, and I mean, I'm only on for a few more weeks. So, by the way, one of the listeners here thought is actually happy about that. Actually happy that I'm on my way out. But you know what, dude, you're not alone. There's like hundreds and thousands of other people who can't wait to get rid of me. So, you know, it doesn't hurt my feelings at all. So, you know. But anyway, Dan, it's great having you on the show, and I look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, Michael. You take care.
You do. Dr. Dan, he writes Sci-Fi 101 for Sci-Fi Portal, and always great to have him on the show and talking a little bit about what's happening with Terminator and such. And you know, I keep rooting for Terminator, and I keep really wanting to see it do well, and it's just not doing it. And Heroes really wasn't doing it for me either, but it is now. I mean, last week's episode was very moving. The whole scene with Hero and his mother, just something about that was just so moving and just so beautiful. And, you know, but once again, I mean, it's this whole, I'm tired of this whole, you know, Hero just falling into things and, you know, where he gets this catalyst, which I'm not all that interested in, but he gets this catalyst and then, you know, Peter Petrelli's father's there and takes it away like 10 seconds later. I just thought, what a moron. And it's just, and it makes it, it just makes it just really difficult to, you know, to really do it. So, but anyway, I don't know, but you know, it's just, I could ramble on for about it forever, but that's not what you're here for. And, apparently some people aren't here for me to rant and rave, you know, when I was, it is my show and such, but, so let's get to the fun stuff. Since I get to the right spot here, tonight's guest is an actor that can take on a number of roles and reinvent himself in more ways than Madonna. Between 1987 and 1994, he played Lieutenant Commander Data in Star Trek The Next Generation and later in four movies, culminating with his character's death in Star Trek Nemesis. In a couple of months, he'll take the stage in Man of La Mancha, has a new music album out called Dreamland, and will be a featured guest at January's Phoenix Comic Con. Please welcome to Sci-Fi Radio in a pre-recorded interview from last week. Here he is, Mr. Brent Spiner. Appreciate you giving a call and you know, and hopefully talking about some of the stuff that you're doing and what's going on. So, you know, and let's start with that. I know that one of the things that you're working on is your new album that's just come out, I guess, called Dreamland, and I guess you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the album's been out for a few months now, but as you say, I am excited about it. I think it's really, well, I'm proud of it. Let me just say that. And I don't say that very often about anything I do, but I had some wonderful people working on it with me, and it surpassed our expectations, I think, in terms of what we finally wound up with.
And I mean, so what are some of the songs that you do on it? What's the type of music that people can expect when they hear it?
Well, it's basically standards. I mean, you know, basically the stuff that I can sing. You know, so it's like basically 40s, 50s, 60s, and a little bit of 70s. And but what's unique about the piece is that it's a story. And there's dialogue and there's sound effects. And it's a piece you have to listen to from beginning to end. It runs 50 minutes, and it's like, we like to think of it as sort of a movie of the mind, and that you're you know, seeing everything in your head while you're listening to it. A lot of people have compared it to a radio show, and in truth, there is influence of radio in it, but I think that's because anything that has music and dialogue and no visual, you immediately think, well, that's got to be radio. But I didn't really think of it that much as a radio show. Although, having listened to a lot of radio and Jack Benny shows and things like that, I'm sure it worked itself into my subconscious or unconscious and influenced this.
Now, and of course, you know, we've always heard a lot of these different actors, great actors who played icons and such, or who've become icons in their own right, you know, in television or in movies, and they go off and, you know, and they record albums, and you know, you think of people like William Shatner or, you know, Jim Neighbors,
right,
or some of those people. I mean, is this kind of like a natural progression? Is this just something that entertainers tend to do? Is this something that really a lot of actors really want to be singers, or how does that work out?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of singers want to be actors, and a lot of actors want to be singers, and I think a lot of them are both. You know, I've done five Broadway musicals, so it's not like I'm coming at this from just like some alien place that suddenly I want to sing. I've been singing since I was 16 and professionally since I was 19. So, and when I say I've done five Broadway musicals, I've also done musicals you know, regionally and in summer stock and things like that when I was a kid. So it's not like it's a sudden whim of mine to sing. I've been doing it for a long time.
And it sounds, and I'm sure it sounds great too. And I mean, is that something you like to do? Do you like to do more Broadway style stuff, or are you more of a person to be, you know, in front of a camera, or what is it?
You know, it doesn't matter to me really. I don't have a preference. It's all good. You know, it's acting and performing, no matter what. It's where you're doing it. It's just really kind of a matter of size. You know, if you're on stage, you're a little bit bigger, and if you're on film, you try to make it a little bit smaller. And other than that, they both have their pluses and minuses. You know, when I've been doing television work for a long time, I yearn for the stage. And when I've been on a Broadway show for 8 months doing the same show every night, 8 times a week, I kind of yearn for the variety of film.
Is either one of them more grueling? Like, is working on a TV series maybe more grueling than being on stage, or is it, or do they kind of have their own aspects to it?
Yeah, they really do. They, you know, it's I hate to call it grueling because, you know, it's hardly work, but and certainly when you're doing something that you really enjoy doing, it's not really labor, but they you know, I mean, doing television, we were doing 16 to 20-hour days every day for 7 years with a couple of months off a year. And on stage, like I say, it's like when you've been doing a show 8 times a week, those Wednesday matinees, you know, when you have to show up and sing for 3 hours, you're like, oh my God, can I do this again? But you get inspired over and over again through a run, just like you do in television.
That's awesome. And of course, and of course, when everybody, or maybe not everybody, but when most people think of Brent Spiner, they think of course, your association with Star Trek, with Data, with all of that. I mean, it's been a very long time. I mean, what, we're talking more than 20 years now since you first started that role. I mean,
right.
Do you get to a point where you're tired of talking about Star Trek, of being asked about it?
You know what? I mean, it doesn't really matter whether I'm tired of it or I'm not tired of it. It just simply is, you know. I mean, I'm lucky to have gotten it. I'm lucky to have been part of it. I'm proud of it. I'm not in any way reluctant for people to know I was on Star Trek, because I think it's a you know, great saga. But the only thing that really gets irritating about it occasionally is that people sort of, I don't know, they just kind of insist that that is who I am, as opposed to it's a role I played. You know, like, I'll give you an example. I'm about to do a production of Man of La Mancha in Los Angeles for a company called the Reprise Productions. Mm-hmm. It's run by Jason Alexander. And so I'm doing this production of Man of La Mancha for the Reprise that's run by Jason Alexander in Los Angeles. And the Los Angeles Times the other day, the only really major newspaper in Los Angeles, which is kind of crazy because it's an enormous city, ran an item that said I was going to be doing it, and the headline of the item was Android of La Mancha, and then it went on to say, in a very kind of clever way, you know, that I was the first being from Omicron Theta to be doing Man of La Mancha, and I'm like, ay, ay, ay. I mean, again, fine it with me if they say Brent Spiner, who played Data on Star Trek The Next Generation, or Brent Spiner, Star Trek, whatever they want to, you know. It did say Brent Spiner, best known as, which I've always found a curious term, because you're only best known for something if people saw you do it.
Yeah.
So if they watched Star Trek, then I'm best known for that. If they didn't watch Star Trek, they don't really know what the person's talking about. Anyway, I just kind of felt in that case, Android of La Mancha, really, it wasn't fair to me. It was like, and again, I'm not embarrassed about having been Data. I'm thrilled to have been Data, but it's like this is a different show, and it's not like I'm going to show up in my makeup and costume and do in Star Trek costume and do Man of La Mancha. It's a serious endeavor. It's going to require a lot of work because there's only two weeks of rehearsal. And to kind of reduce it to this sort of very unimaginative old, you know, we've seen it a dozen times in print already. So think of something else, you know, or just do a straight piece.
And plus, it almost takes away from what you're doing as well. I mean, it's not, because it is Brent Spiner doing this. It's not Data doing this.
Well, exactly. And why is that necessary? I just don't get it. I mean, I understand people associate me with the role. I'm happy for that. I'm proud of it. I'm glad to be associated with it. But when I do other things, I don't get why it has to be filtered through Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm trying to think of other things like that, you know, of, well, I know there are a lot of things like that, but...
But you got the lucky side of it, where, you know, where you had a character that was so well-beloved, where then there's other actors that were involved in the show, like Will Wheaton, for instance, who still, even to this day, has to go through, even though he's become very popular in his own, you know, in his new way with his web dealings and such, but, I mean, he had to deal with people saying he was Wesley Crusher the whole time and didn't like him and treated him horribly because of it.
Well, I guess. I mean, did people really treat him horribly? I never saw that.
Well, he says they did. So.
No, did they? Well, you know, I don't really think they treated him too horribly. I mean, you know, fans, you know, individually fans are amazing, but sometimes there's this collective consciousness that creates something that's just not really, you know, reality.
Yeah.
And whatever it was that sort of made people think that Will was anything other than just a wonderful young actor, I have no idea.
Because he said in the past that he's actually was brought to tears many times when he was, you know, still involved with the show, where just people would come up to him and would just say nasty things because they didn't like his character, and so they felt that he was the reason for that, and he's like, hey, I was just a teenager reading lines that were given to me, and, you know, I had no control over that, so.
Yeah, I understand, but I have no idea why people do that. I really don't. I mean, I think there's a really fine line between love and hate. That's all I can say, and I really don't know. You know, people are, when you're a public person doing things that are as public as television and acting are, it's the only field really where everyone has an opinion about your work. You know, it's not like doctors don't get reviewed basically by the public. You know, they don't come in and go, well, that was a fantastic operation, or you really blew that one. I really didn't think your skill was there that time. You know, they don't do that. But performance really is so public, you know, and it's for the public, so they have, you know, every right to judge it however they want to, I suppose. But I think being mean, and particularly being anonymously mean, is sort of one of the less sort of nice things about humanity.
Yeah. Well, you know, and one other person that actually, you know, has had kind of the wrath of the fans and such, and somebody that, when I've talked with other people involved with the different Star Trek shows in different ways, you know, they say that he gets a bad rap all the time, but that's talking about Rick Berman, who, you know, I mean, he's been vilified among fandom, and, I mean, is that a fair thing for fans to do? Is it that they don't really know what Rick Berman did?
Yeah, I think it's really sort of short-sighted of people, I mean, to give Rick grief, because, A, you know, then, you know, I just say to any of them, well, tell you what, you go produce a television show, you know, and produce hundreds of hours of television, which these people have watched more than once, you know. You know, Rick, if it wasn't for Rick, I don't know where these ideas come from, but Rick, more than anybody else, protected Gene Roddenberry's vision. I mean, there were times where we wanted to do things and Rick would say, no, 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 Gene wouldn't want that. That's not what Star Trek is about. We can't do that. And, you know, he did his best to make good television and good films. It's like nobody sets out to do anything that people aren't going to like. You know, you're doing the best you can. And I think he did pretty well, at least. Certainly Paramount Pictures thought so, because, you know, they revered him for a number of years, as well they should have. I mean, he did over, I don't know how many hundreds of episodes. Trying to get a single episode of television on the air on time is such a daunting task. And this guy did it week after week, year after year, and really in the most graceful manner. If you ever worked for Rick, he was never yelled, never was angry, always was even-tempered and reasonable. It's just preposterous. It's just a lot of people commenting on something they don't know anything about.
So, yeah, because, I mean, one of the things, and I mean, and I've been on that side, too, where, you know, where I've said things that, you know, it's like, oh, I don't understand what he's doing and why is he still involved and such. But then I stop and think about it, and I think about all the contributions he makes. And look at the things that he's been involved with and where we probably wouldn't have had other shows like Deep Space Nine and some of these others that are actually very quite enjoyable.
Yeah,
and,
well, you wouldn't have them.
Yeah.
They simply would not have gone on. And Rick was also handpicked by Gene to carry that, you know, his torch, and he took that responsibility really seriously. And so I don't know, you know, but there's, again, it's a lot of conversation about something that people just don't know about. And if they didn't like the product, well, that's fair, you know, to say, hey, I thought it was bad, you know. But the whole bashing thing, I think, is just, you know, people do it because, A, they're anonymous, and, B, because they can. You know, there's an outlet for it.
Yeah. Because the Internet's really changed. I mean, when Next Generation first premiered, obviously, you know, most people didn't even have computers, let alone the Internet. So you didn't really have that instant in a way of being able to broadcast those thoughts and feelings as easily as it is now. I mean, has that kind of changed the way, you know, the way people kind of worry about image or the way they perceive things, or, I mean, just...
I don't think so, you know, because I think you really basically finally just kind of ignore it. You know, it's just a lot of energy in the wind because, for example, I mean, J.J. Abrams is doing this film, right, you know, the feature that's coming out next. I don't think he listens to what anybody thinks about what he should be doing. I think he does what he thinks is best, because he's been given that job. And if it turns out great, great. And if it doesn't, well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people there to second guess him.
Yeah.
You know?
And what do you think of the movie, though? I mean, since you brought it up, not me. I was trying not to.
Oh, I don't care. I mean, no, that's fine with me.
Well, I just figured that a lot of people get tired of... Because I know it seems like every time anybody who's involved with Star Trek, they get, you know, if they are put in a situation where they're asked questions. It seems like everybody always asks the question of, you know, what do you think of the new movie, or what do you think of this and that? So,
right.
it must be tiresome after a while.
I mean, it's obvious a question, I suppose. But, you know, honestly, I don't think about it very much. Unless, you know, somebody asks me the question. You know, I hope it's a wonderful success. I'm sure it looks fun, and Leonard's involved, and J.J.'s a really talented guy. So, and I know a lot of those actors, and they're fantastic. I can't see any reason why it wouldn't be successful.
Yeah. You saw the trailer, the newest trailer?
Well, you know, I haven't seen it, but people have told me about it. And so it sounds great. I you know, really, it serves nobody for this film to be anything other than fantastic. The fans, the actors who have ever been on the show, the public, anybody. We just hope it's great.
So, you know, and that's kind of an interesting mentality, because I remember when Next Generation first came out, I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of that pushback from fans of the original series. And then when Deep Space Nine premiered, there was the pushback from Next Generation fans and the original series. And it just seemed like as Star Trek kind of progressed, you always had kind of the pushback from fans of the old. And, you know, it seems like a lot of people thought, especially from those who were being replaced in these roles, but that there would be a lot of pushback from this. But it seems like that there's actually a lot of – everybody seems to be pretty much on board with this and fans of this.
Well, you know, it's senseless to be anything other than optimistic about it. I mean, you know, it's also typical of every genre. You know, it's like James Bond, you know, well, Sean Connery was it. And then Roger Moore came along and everybody was like, Roger Moore, no way. Oh, Roger Moore, not bad. And then it was like, Pierce Brown, not Pierce. Oh, Pierce is pretty good. Hey, okay. Oh, not Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig, he's pretty good, you know. So it's like, and Batman's the same way. Batman was like, oh, not Christian Bale is Batman? No way. Oh, ooh, that's pretty good, you know. So it's, I think it's natural to be sort of like skeptical, and then, you know, hopefully you get surprised, and the stuff is good.
You know, in one series that actually did surprise me that, and I really didn't want to because of the pushback against Brandon Braga, but The Threshold had a very short life, but you know there was a huge fan following with that, and unfortunately,
yeah,
ratings didn't follow. I mean, what are your feelings on that? I mean it was a show that really had good intentions, at least.
Well, first of all, there are people who don't like Brandon.
Yeah.
Well, what's not to like? Brandon's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know how fandom is. There's just a lot of just the same way that people vilify Rick Berman, they kind of include Brandon with that as well.
I don't get it. I Brandon's a terrific writer. He's a very inventive, very fine writer, and that's why he works as one and is continually hired as one. You know, it's not easy to get hired as a writer in Hollywood. You know, there's a lot of people. Everybody you run into, your dentist has a script. You know, everybody's got a script. And people who actually do it and are hired to do it, they generally are hired because they're pretty good and because they can deliver the goods, you know. But anyway, Threshold, I think I love Threshold. I thought it was a really good show. I thought it was going to be a great show. They had some great ideas about what was coming in not just the rest of the first season, but in the second, third, and fourth seasons, where already there was a great arc of an idea going of what was going to happen. And I loved doing it. It was a terrific cast. I loved working with Brandon, and who could complain about working with Carla Gugino or, you know, Peter Dinklage? I mean, it was a great bunch.
Yeah, and I mean, and of course, a lot of people say that Threshold kind of suffered more or less from the fact that it was coming out in a time when, you know, when all the networks are trying to put out, you know, certain types of shows, and you know that whole copy, you know, what's good and what's working, and but not everything's a copy. Where Threshold kind of got lumped into that, but Threshold actually was its own animal, and
it was. But I think Threshold suffered from anything, from being on a network. It's just difficult to do creative work on a network for any extended period of time because there are just too many cooks.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You got too many people to answer to and too many people who have ideas about what they would rather see, and it changes the whole initial artistic impulse into something else, and it just, you know, it loses something.
So is it...
You're much better off in cable or you know... Well, that's it, cable.
that just answers the question I was just going to ask. Like, so you think that kind of the real push is into cable, and is that because there's just more time and more effort and less interference, or what?
Well, there's not more time, but there probably is less interference. And
yeah.
I mean, unless you're in pay cable, which is like there's the other thing, pay cable. in pay cable, you have more time because you do fewer episodes.
Yeah.
But. But yeah, I think there's less. I think generally in a cable, if they hire you to do something, it's because they thought you were good and knew how to do it, and they let you do it for the most part. Much more than network. Network is just so micromanaged by so many people that you're getting notes from, you know, everybody and their children.
Yeah, I mean, even Gene Roddenberry himself was talking about when they brought Star Trek The Next Generation to air, that one of the things that attracted him to doing it was the fact that it wasn't on a network. And, of course, it was in first-run syndication, which is kind of a dying or already dead animal now. But,
right.
I mean, but at the time, I mean, that was just a different way to go. And
yeah, it was.
I think that allowed Next Generation to thrive without having all that interference.
Oh, I think it was, too. I don't think they ever got notes from anybody. I mean, first of all, there was only the studio, as opposed to the studio and the network.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of Next Generation, there was only the studio, and the studio so trusted Gene and ultimately Rick that they weren't giving notes at all. I mean, we were basically, you know, they'd read the scripts, but that's pretty much as far as it went, and they would go, yeah, that's fine, do that. And that's what we'd do. as opposed to getting really reams of notes about what they'd like to see coming from both network and studio execs. That happens, you know, when you're on a network show.
Were you happy with the way that the movie franchise version of Next Generation went, like with the direction that it went and kind of how it concluded?
I was okay with it. I mean, you know, a lot of people were really unhappy about the way it concluded, particularly with my character.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess there's again, whatever people think or feel is valid. You know, we did it. We made that decision to kill Data off because we thought, look, this is the last movie we're going to make. Let's end it with a big dramatic bang and complete his journey of humanity. You know, of finally he makes the ultimate human sacrifice. And I don't know, people didn't like it because I guess at the time, certainly they felt they didn't know we weren't coming back. We knew we weren't coming back pretty much. But in the end, it didn't really matter because Paramount killed all the other characters.
Yeah.
You know? So really? We killed Data, but Paramount killed everyone else.
You know, I mean, I was happy with the Data ending, you know, just my own personal thoughts. I mean, the Data ending,
yeah,
I thought was great. The only thing I didn't like was the other android that kind of brought it. To me, it seemed like it was kind of a safety net. It's like, well, just in case we do have another movie, at least we can do something. And, you know,
right.
I mean, not that we don't want you to be unemployed or anything.
Well, you know, there is that aspect of it, certainly. I mean, that he was there sort of as a safety net. I mean, that wasn't really the reason he was there, but certainly the end of the picture, we led one to believe if we come back, he will be there and he will have, like, grown a little bit more by the next time we see him.
Yeah.
But finally, we created the character, and it was a matter of do we kill him too, or do we just kill Data, or do we, you know, we figured one android death was enough for a movie.
Definitely. But I mean, and also you had the another issue too, where Data's an android, he's not supposed to age, but
mm-hmm.
Brent Spiner as an actor is aging, and
right.
You know, the makeup can only cover that up so much. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously you would have to have an end point at some point as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I really had reached that end point. I mean, you know, never say never, of course, but pretty much never. Because I think I'd gotten a little long in the tooth to play the role. It would that I had had another 20 years to play it. I mean, I wish I wasn't that young when we started doing the show. If I'd been 10 years younger when we started, I think I could have done it another 10 years and I'd been happy to. But the fact of the matter is, I think I was too old for it. And I know people disagree with that, but I really... And some people agree wholeheartedly, by the way. But I've described this before. It's like I'm a big Marx Brothers fan. And for me, Harpo was wonderful when he was young because there was something otherworldly about him and something childlike. And somehow that childlike essence wasn't as charming when he was old. When they were putting on the wig and the fright wig and and doing the whole thing, Groucho still worked because age really didn't matter with Groucho. But Harpo somehow didn't work anymore, and I felt like I was the Harpo of the show. Everybody else still worked fine, you know, incidentally. I think Patrick could have gone on playing Captain Picard another 10 years easy, and Jonathan, and on and on and on. I think mine was the one character that required youth, and I just didn't have it anymore.
And one nice thing, too, and probably I think one of the highlights of shows like Star Trek Enterprise, you know, there was a few in that show, but when you were allowed to come back and play a whole different character, you know, come back and playing, you know, I guess,
yep.
Dr. Soong, an older version, or I guess a previous version of Dr. Soong, more or less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that allowed you to stretch it and be, you know, to even, especially coming to the fans that have seen you pretty much as Data all the time.
Right.
Say, hey, you know what? There is more to me than just Data. This is
well, and also that character was part of the family.
Yeah.
You know, so I would have been happy to do another film playing Dr. Soong, you know, because he is, Data was built in Dr. Soong's image, you know. So I felt like then Data sort of still would have been there. But you know what? The truth is, if I had done, if we'd done another movie, and I was saying, I think I'm a little too old, but I'm going to do it, half the audience would say, no, you're not too old. Go ahead, do it, do it. And the other half would be going, oh, why did he do this? Boy, he looks so old. This is horrible. You should have quit. So, you know, you can't please everybody. You just have to go with what your gut instinct is, and mine was, enough's enough.
Yeah. And then, of course, when I know that that's something that you've been open about in the past. He's never kept secret, like, hey, you know, I have to end Data at some point. He can't be here forever. But then you have fans who sit there and they say, oh, well, now he's just trying to take off and, you know,
right.
do something
exactly.
else. And what a jerk yeah. kind of thing. And,
yeah, exactly. And, you know, the fact is, and then I have people saying, well, you know, you set it up in an episode where he has an aging chip so he can get old. But it's not even really about entirely about what I look like. It's also about behavior. And there's an essence of childlikeness in Data that isn't that attractive in an older man, you know?
The Harpo
so
thing. Yeah.
I'm my judgment is, you know, stop before it's really embarrassing. And that's the only reason to stop. Not because, oh, I want to put this behind me and do other things and I'm, you know, don't want anyone to think of me as Data anymore. I that's not at all true.
I know you have a lot of stuff going on, and I just wanted to just wrap this up with just, you know, a kind of a question that I guess you probably get asked a lot. I'm not sure because, you know, conventions, everybody seems to have this kind of question. But, I mean, what is it that you took from Star Trek? What is it that, you know, how did Star Trek influence you in that role? And I mean, and how does that, has that changed, you know, like who you are today, what you might have been or?
It's hard to say, really. I mean, I think that's something, again, for people who know me to judge
yeah.
and say, well, he was changed by this experience in this way. I don't really know. I mean, I know my life is completely different because I did Star Trek. And hopefully, you know, I've met so many more people than I met prior to doing Star Trek because the fan base is so large and I've done so many events where I'm face-to-face with the fans. But I've taken away, you know, some of the positive, because Star Trek is nothing but positive, and applied it in my own life. I don't know. I mean, hopefully I have more patience with people and more simpatico for people as a result of having had this experience.
And, of course, you're also going to be at Phoenix Comic Con here in a few weeks. And, you know, do you look forward to conventions? Is that the kind of thing that you like to do, or is it?
Well, there's a certain amount of enjoyment in them, yes. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I would prefer that I was too busy to do them.
Yeah.
But yeah. since I'm not, I do enjoy going to them. I enjoy meeting the people. You know, the fans have always been, on a face-to-face up front, really nice and really, really pleasing to come into contact with. So, yeah, I enjoy them. But, again, being honest, you know, would that I was just too busy doing movie after movie. But, you know, hey, such is life.
Yeah, at least the roles you're taking on, though, have been interesting and fascinating. And, you know, and it's great just seeing just how you can, you know, just take on so many different roles and you have that you know, that range. That's just, I think it's amazing.
Well, thanks. I had really good training when I was a young guy by a man named Cecil Pickett in Houston, Texas, who kind of like, that's what he encouraged was versatility, and that's sort of the road I went down and tried to do as much of that as I could. I make my managers crazy because I pass on a lot of work, and it drives them nuts because I just don't want to do something if I can't find something interesting about it. Mm-hmm. And just to appear is not that interesting to me anymore. It was at one time, but I've sort of gotten over to the showing off part and just want to really do things that, even if there's just a germ of it, it excite me in some way.
Yeah, so it becomes more of a personal experience, which I guess acting really is anyway, isn't it? I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
But. Well, great. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time and, you know, talking, you know, to the listeners and everything else and the fans, of course. And, you know, and I mean, we can't wait to see what you have coming up next. I mean, what are you, are there any, you know, film projects or anything you're working on?
Well, I did do an episode of a television show directed by Jonathan Frakes. It's a TV show coming on TNT called Leverage. It's produced by Dean Devlin, who did Independence Day. And Jonathan directed it, and I did a guest shot for him. And what else have I got? Well, I'm going to be doing this production of Man of La Mancha in Los Angeles in the month of February.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And Leverage looks like it's going to be a good show. I know that TNT's been hyping that a lot. So.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good, too. It's a wonderful bunch of actors, and it's a clever idea. I think it's going to be great.
And you like working with Jonathan Frakes, I take it, too.
No, not really. But, yeah, I like working with Jonathan. Jonathan is one of the great people of the earth. You know, one of the best things about doing this show for me, having done Star Trek, is that one of the things I came away with was a lot of really good friends that I didn't have before, because we're all still very close. I talk to everybody all the time, and I saw Patrick 2 weeks ago. We had dinner. I talk to Dorn all the time, everybody. So, you know, I did take that with me, and that is very valuable.
It seems like Dorn keeps in touch with everybody.
Well,
always talking about
Dorn. Well, Dorn is a phone person, so he loves being on the phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll hang up the phone and then call somebody else. And that's just what he does all day.
Well, that's good. At least it keeps in touch with everybody. And
yeah.
It's good to see the sensitive side of them like that. But.
Exactly.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on. And, you know, we'll definitely make sure we point everybody the way to get your new album. And you know.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And pleasure talking to you. And all the best to you.
Same here. And thank you so much for coming on.
Okay. Have a great holiday, okay?
You too. Oh, you know, I really got to do more pre-recorded interviews. This has been, like, the most relaxing show I think I have ever done in my life. Just sitting back and actually being able to talk to people in the chat room. And, you know, it's nice having so many people in the chat room, too, by the way. We have all kinds of great people in there, and, you know, really glad to have you on. But, you know what, we still have some time left on the show, so if you're trying to bolt because, oh, you know, no more Brent Spiner, we're going to run off. One thing I want you to know is next week when we have Jane Espenson on, what we're going to do is, since nobody seemed to figure out where the edit was, because I had a really big edit, there's a couple of small funny outtakes, and Brent Spiner said I could play those on the air if I wanted. So I'll actually say that for next week. So if you want to hear some of the outtakes from that interview, I mean, it's not like anything you roll over, you know, on the floor about, but, you know, it's actually kind of fun to listen to and kind of get the kind of get a natural impression of Brent Spiner, and you know, he even joked to have it put on the air, so maybe we'll do that next week and you know, see how it worked out. And by the way, thank you everybody too, you know, for saying how much they liked the interview. It's really, you know, it's really tough sometimes when, you know, when you're talking with people that you don't really, you know, that you've idolized or have seen on TV, and you know, I mean, I've covered events with everything from, you know, TV stars, movie stars, athletes, you know, to presidents of the United States and things like that. But, you know, it's still, even after all these years of doing that, it's still kind of nerve-wracking sometimes. And, you know, rushing home to get set up for this interview and, you know, then trying to at least sound interesting is tough. So I really appreciate all the nice feedback on how everybody liked the interview. And, you know, and Robin Brownfield also says that the Jane Espenson interview should be great. I can tell you that is great. We talked about a lot of great things. We talked about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We talked about pretty much how Star Trek was kind of that springboard for her to kind of really get into the business. You know, we talked about Dollhouse. We talked about Joss Whedon, you know, zooming around the offices while she was being interviewed on his scooter. I mean, it was all kinds of really cool things. So, you know, you really have to check that out. If you want to call in, by the way, and talk about what Brent talked about or anything else that's on your mind, or if you just want to call me names, whatever, our phone number here is 646-200-3642. That's 646-200-3642. And let's check the phone lines real quick. We do have a caller calling in from the 610 area code. Let's see that, 610. Usually, if you're a first-time listener, One of the things I do when I do spend time with callers is I try to figure out where everybody's from. And I want to say Pennsylvania, but it's not from the part of Pennsylvania I grew up in, but I think it's Pennsylvania. I don't know. But anyway, 610 area code, you're on Sci-Fi Radio.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Crazy Joe.
Hey, Crazy Joe. Are you calling from Pennsylvania, or did I get that wrong?
Yeah, you got that right. I'm right outside Philadelphia.
Oh, man, I still rock at this. It's
well,
my whole guessing area codes.
I want to give you a public apology in the chat room. In the chat room, I made a comment that your rant a couple weeks ago was embarrassing, and I misspoke, and I took an issue with one little thing, but I'm a longtime fan, so I didn't mean to offend you.
Because, well, the only thing that would have been offensive about that, Joe, is if, you know, was that you got the wrong show. It was last week's show that was embarrassing, so... last week's show, it's sad. I can't even remember it that well because I had this really bad sinus headache. And so I took like just a couple of powerful drugs and mixed them together. And, you know, and I mean, it was horrible. And I must have sounded like I was drunk the whole time. So that show, that would have been an embarrassment.
I did not get the drunk vibe from last week's show.
Maybe it's just my memory on that, but that guy a couple of weeks ago. And I know that you. Don't worry, you weren't the only one that had some issues with that. And I mean, because we usually don't bring on guests that I would, you know, that I would kind of become, you know, combative with, I guess. And you know, and he wasn't supposed to be that guest. He was supposed to be somebody to come on and talk about UFOs. And you know, the most combative I would become is saying that I don't believe in UFOs and that kind of thing. But I mean, I don't know if it was my questions that led him to this direction or if that was his agenda the whole time, but, I mean, he just went on this whole thing about, you know, these general ideas that somehow culminate into ending the world or some major change or something like that. And I don't know what it was, but it's just like, oh, please. You know, I just have a hard time. I'm a big skeptic when it comes to that. So
I know what you mean. I was doing... Okay, I don't want to do it if you don't want me to. Can I plug the show?
Of course.
Okay, I'm on a podcast called Slice of Sci-Fi,
mm-hmm.
And a few months ago, we were interviewing a guy who sold property on the moon. And at first, you know, the interview was going okay. He was saying, you know, send away, we'll give you these slips of paper that say you own an acre on the moon. But somewhere in the middle of the interview, it turned crazy. And he started telling us about how he had technology to stop anyone from landing on the moon that he didn't want to land there.
Oh, man.
And I swear, like, all of my co-hosts around the table, every one of us just stopped in silence, like, what? What did he just say? And, yeah, so I know when those interviews go like that.
Well, you know, but that would be kind of interesting. I think what was that interview, too, is, you know, because what's nice is that we have the chat room. And like I said, usually we don't have this many people in the chat room, so it's great. Because a lot of people listen to our show, like you do, what you mentioned before, is that you have to listen to the podcast version and, you know, not have a lot of time to listen to it live. But because we're on a weird time at night anyway. But, I mean, it's just that, you know, but I was just looking at the reaction of people in the chat room. And, I mean, and even members of our staff, you know, who usually stick it out no matter what, they're like, oh, you know, look at the time. I got to go wash my hair or something. So, I mean, I was getting bored. So I was just like, you know, I mean, I don't just rant just to entertain. But, I mean, of course, you know, you have to rant a little bit just to entertain. But, yeah, I mean, I probably could have let him talk a little bit more, but he was just boring me to tears, and it was just, you know, and I mean, and I had to start challenging him just because the stuff that he was saying was just making me be like, what is he talking about? And, you know, this is crazy. I don't want people thinking that this is the kind of stuff that I'm, you know, that I'm promulgating all over the place, because I don't, you know, I joke that the world's going to end in 2012, but it's actually a joke, you know?
Right.
So, well, I don't know. Some people just, I guess everybody has the right to have their own little thing, but I just, you know, I just don't like where people can just take all these. It's like, I mean, you're a Star Trek fan, aren't you, Joe?
Oh, yeah, hardcore.
You remember in Star Trek Voyager, and you have to be really hardcore for Star Trek Voyager, but there was a really, it was actually a pretty good episode where Seven of Nine was like downloading like the database and stuff into her cortex or something. But what she was doing was she was coming out, and I think it was called conspiracies or something, and she's coming out, she's taking all these different events that Voyager had gone through, like in the logs and stuff, and created all these scenarios, like where Janeway, like the Federation deliberately sent her over, you know, to this side of, you know, to the Delta Quadrant to make these alliances and stuff, and, you know, for a big all-out assault against a Borg or something like that. And, you know, like it was like where she was taking all these things that had nothing to do with each other, but finding ways to loop them together, and then suddenly she had this huge conspiracy or something. And that's kind of what this guy sounded like to me, and that's what, you know, I kind of had to call him on. So, you know, that was where I was ranting.
Yeah, I understand that. My one irk came from, he said something, and I wanted to hear where he was going to go with it. And not that I agreed with him. I just wanted to hear where it was going to go. And I felt it was kind of left hanging. He made a comment about, we're going to enter a new age. And I was like, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah, and then I cut him off. And that's like where I cut him off. And so, yeah, that's my bad. You mentioned that in the chat room during the Brent Spiner thing. Like, you know, you're right. I probably should have at least let him explain that. But I was just afraid I was going to fall asleep by the time he did it. So, you know,
well,
I couldn't shut him up.
Yeah, that wouldn't make for a very good show.
Yeah, it just, you know, you got to, because you know what it's like doing slices of sci-fi and everything. You have to be entertaining as well. And, you know, there's lots of different guests I'd love to bring on, but I would know that it would interest me but bore everybody else to tears. And I can't, you know, of course we have to be entertaining at the same time. So, and you know, we try to bring in guests like Brent Spiner and everybody else, but you guys get some really good ones over there. And, you know, of course you guys have been doing this a lot longer too.
Well,
so.
there are interviews that don't, you know, unlike you, you're doing live radio. Unlike, you know, our show is completely a podcast, and you know, there are interviews where we're done and we look at, and you know, the main host of the show, Mike Meninger, he'll just like roll his eyes and be like, I don't know what the hell we're gonna do with that one.
I don't want to
name any names there.
So. Yeah, but I'm sure people listen, they'll figure it out. But Joe, no, there's no need to apologize. But you know, I mean, you know, I'm just having fun with you. But you know, I mean, you guys do a good show over there. So, you know, and it's really great. It's great having you in live and listening and stuff. And you know, I'd say keep coming back, but you'll have to do it with Wayne.
Well,
when Wayne comes on. And he is, by the way, a much better host than I am, so.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
I don't know about that. I've been listening to you I've been reading your articles before I was listening to you. You're pretty good, so.
Yeah, well, but Wayne is actually, I don't know if you ever heard Wayne on the show, but, I mean.
I have, yes. Yeah.
He's, like, the nicest guy and the most interesting and always has these really well-thought-out things. And Nick Chase is going to be on with him when they do this beginning of February. And Nick is great, too, and, you know, and I mean, it's going to be more, I think it's going to have a probably, it's all up to them on what to do with the show, but I think it's going to kind of take that classic sci-fi bent a little bit, so, you know, I think you'd be hearing more about older shows and such, and, you know, and things that I should be watching, but I just don't have time, but you know, but I'll be doing another show, so I think it's all going to work out great, and, you know, I really can't wait to hear the new sci-fi radio, mostly because I won't have to do it anymore. It's a lot of work, and
well,
you know that.
Well, you know, I'm not in Phoenix anymore, so I'm not in the studio on Slice anymore. I'm calling in a weekly segment every week, but I'm not around the table with the guys anymore. And I'll tell you, you miss it. you really get to miss it. So
that's why I'm not leaving it totally. That's why I'm going to do another weekly show. But you know, it the new ones could be great, and we'll have to make sure we get you involved with it somehow. I think you'd enjoy coming on once in a while, and. You know, it's a lot of fun, and, you know, we have some good ideas for it, so it's kind of tied to our new website, so, you know, we're pretty excited. But, Joe, it's great having you on, and, you know, feel free to call in any time.
Thank you, and, yeah, you're doing a good show. I look forward to Wayne, but we're going to miss you.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for coming on and calling in.
All right, bye.
But, you know, Slice of Sci-Fi, by the way, great, great podcast. So if you ever get a chance to, you know, to check it out, you should. I think you can actually, I'm trying to think of the best places to get it. I think they're at sliceofsci-fi.com, but I think I've found it in iTunes before. So, you know, just type that into the search window in the iTunes store in the podcast area. I think it might be in that special area. So, you know, like where they feature different podcasts, I think they're in there. So you can check them out. They always have some great guests, and they're very entertaining shows, so make sure you check that out. Looks like we have somebody calling in from a Skype line or some line, unless They have a phone number of 111111. I don't know. So I don't know what area that's in. But hi, you're on Sci-Fi Radio.
Hi, Mike. It's Raisa.
Hi, Raisa. We haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on?
I wanted to, before we ran out of time, with all the news about Brian Fuller returning to Heroes, in the interview that he gave with Michael Ostiello, he let drop as a separate tidbit that through the magic of editing, he's managed to jerry-rig a more satisfying finale for Pushing Daisies, so it's no longer going to end on a cliffhanger.
That's right, because he actually changed the beginning and the ending of the last episode, right?
Yeah, I don't know what he did, but he managed to do something with the limited resources he had left. Because the last thing I heard was that the problem they had was that they wanted to do something more satisfying, but they were out of money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were literally just broke, and so they couldn't fix it even if they wanted to. But apparently between that and this latest interview, he managed to jerry-rig something separate and fix it, or at least make it better than it was going to be.
You know, and it's good that they're doing that, because I unfortunately haven't been able to watch Pushing Daisies. I watched, like, the first two episodes, and unfortunately haven't had a chance to get back into it. By the time I did, they were canceling it. But, I mean, I really hate to see when shows can't end properly, and, you know,
yeah,
and I'm glad that they're going to get some closure on this.
Yeah, it's bad enough when they're canceled, but when it's canceled on a cliffhanger, it's like salt in the wound.
Yeah, it is. It's horrible.
Yeah, so he's apparently fixed it to the extent that it can be fixed. And we'll see how that's going to work out.
Well, good. Well, Raisa, thanks for letting us know about that and, you know, and keeping us up to date on Pushing Daisies. And, you know, hopefully it'll be, you know, something that we can enjoy as it ends what should have been a much longer run.
Yeah.
So,
Have a good night.
Raisa. Yeah, me too. Raisa, she's always on our message boards, by the way, if you ever want to really get a good dose of all the news. And just visit the message boards at sci-fiportal.com. And, you know, always wonderful stuff. And, you know, tips us off on stuff a lot of times, too. Makes our life just a lot easier. Anyway, I almost jumped into the wrong part of the show here, but I wanted to thank everyone who joined us on Sci-Fi Radio tonight, including Dan Capora, Star Trek's Brent Spiner, Joe from Slice of Sci-Fi, and Race, and everybody else. And next week, we have a great special guest, as I talked about before. Jane Espenson is a popular writer with Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Battlestar Galactica, as well as the new Joss Whedon series, Dollhouse. She'll be on to talk with us about the webisodes she wrote for Battlestar Galactica, which, by the way, they come out on Friday, beginning at noon. I think you can find it on the Sci-Fi site first, is what I understand, but make sure you watch them. And, you know, she's going to talk about that because she wrote those webisodes, and also she does discuss the sexuality of one of the characters as he comes out of the closet, which has been talked about all over the web. I won't spoil it for you here if you haven't heard, but one of the characters are coming out of the closet. After that, by the way, we're going to be off for 2 weeks as people celebrate the holidays. For many of you, it will be Christmas Eve. For me, it'll be Wednesday night with a break from the radio show. We will be back in 2009 with some great new guests. We are hoping to actually have Michael Ostiello on. I think that the last time I talked to him, he wanted to come on right before Lost premiered. So I think Lost premieres before I head out of the show at the end of January. So, yeah, it's like mid-January or something. So, yeah, hopefully we'll have Michael Ostiello on. And we're also expecting to have Jonathan Frakes from Star Trek The Next Generation. I know that he was scheduled for last week. It didn't work out. We were going to try to get him on for next week, but then we were able to bring Jane Espenson in, and that's a little more timely. So we don't have any more shows after that until January. So hopefully we might be able to work that out. Our booking producer, Sarah Chase, is doing that right now. And another person she's trying to bring in, too, and it's somebody that I just thought would be kind of funny, is Alan Ruck. We're hoping to have him on. And, you know, like I said, none of these guys are confirmed yet, but we're working on it, and it's looking good. And he was, you know, of course, from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and he was the captain of the Enterprise B and watched Kirk die, which a few of us would be very happy to watch again and again. Our shows, of course, air Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, at www.scifiradio.com. That's S-Y-F-Y radio. Don't forget that you can get automated reminders of upcoming shows straight to your email box simply by becoming a Blog Talk Radio member. It's free. All you have to do is look for the register button on your screen. When you fill in all the blanks, just come back to Sci-Fi Radio and mark us as a favorite, and you'll never be without your Sci-Fi Radio again. Be sure to come back anytime to hear all of our past Sci-Fi Radio shows in their entirety. You can stream it on the site, download the MP3, or simply visit the iTunes store. Just type in SYFY in the search window, and you'll discover how you can subscribe to our show for free and get each episode straight to your iPod. So, man, that's what I was up pretty early. Usually it takes me forever. I just drag all that stuff on, and, you know, who knows what's happening. And by the way, if you are going to come back and if you want to get a the podcast version of the show or the archive version of the show, if you're listening live right now, I just want to let you know that after we get the archive version available, we're probably going to do a quick edit, and then we'll re-upload the show, and that probably, you know, means that it won't really be up again until tomorrow morning. So you'll be able to hear, like, the original broadcast, but if you're listening to this and you heard music and stuff at the beginning and me sounding like crap, then we should have that fixed. We'll just do a quick edit and re-upload the show and take out some of that problems so that, you know, at least mostly just a quick, clean show. And, you know, that's just the way it should be because, you know, it's Brent Spiner, and, you know, we don't want him to have his voice on a crappy show. So anyway, you know, that's it for Sci-Fi Radio. Our producers are Wayne Hall and Sarah Chase, who both do a great job. And thanks for everybody else for coming out tonight. This is Michael Hinman, and you're listening to Sci-Fi Radio.
You'll find Sci-Fi Radio on Blog Talk Radio, located on the web at blogtalkradio.com/sci-fi-radio. That's SYFY Radio. Join us every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time and every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Those who believe that life here began out there, far across the universe, with tribes of humans who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians, or the Toltecs, or the Mayans. Some believe that there may yet be brothers of man who even now fight to survive somewhere beyond the heavens.